welcome to another exciting episode of the Chattering Classes. I would say the episode, but I don't really know because, you know, that's how we do things around here. And I'm talking to the Juice. Hey, Juice, how are you going?
Hi there. Welcome to Chattering Classes.
Oh, thank you. What? All right. The Juice, or is also called Michael Barry. That's my brother. Hi. My older brother, I should say.
Yes, that's where I fit in.
And I asked you to pick a number between 1 and 2,500 to start off with. And this is, you chose 1632.
Mm-hmm. My favorite number.
Now, you said this was going to be good content. My cat is crawling over the computer. Go.
Well, everyone that has a cat will be going, oh, that happens to me. Everyone that doesn't cute. Have a cat are reaching for their gun.
And say, shoot it. Yes, kick it. I remember my good friend Craig Phillips said, if your foot doesn't hurt after kicking a cat, then what's the point? So question 1632 Ooh. Is, are you happy with the way you look? How about that?
Am I happy with the way I look?
Yeah,
we might say that I look like you and let other people that know you come up with their own answer.
Why didn't I even think of that? That never occurred to me that would reflect. We don't look anything alike.
I don't need to say anything else now.
Do your children?
No, to be honest, you're right. I probably look more like mum's side of the family, and you wane towards dad's side of the family.
Yeah, that's true, but I don't know if your kids do the same as mine, in that every now and then I'll say something or do something, and they'll look at me and say, you look like just like Uncle Mike then.
No, I generally don't get that. There are times when I talk to you and Jace and I go, oh my God, I sound like you.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. When I talk to mum on the phone, sometimes you just go, am I getting feedback of like both my brothers in my ears? What's going on? Like,
yes.
She has told me that she only knows who it is by what we say, not by the voices.
Yeah. I think it's easier with phone recognition, with the number coming up, but I used to say, oh, it's number one here. Not right. Because I'm the best, but I used to say, hey, it's number one. How are you?
Right. All right. I better say I'm number three. What if I just say bronze here? That might be better.
or number four and really screw with their head.
So now it's just occurred to me that if that's the case, then are people going to listen to this podcast and go, I just had no idea. It sounded like Matt just talking to himself.
Matt talking to himself. That's right. He's done an echo. He's done a Lieutenant Steve. There you go.
Oh, geez. Yeah, thank you. I like a good callback to like three episodes ago. Now let's play that clip. No, I think maybe we should, before we speak, say our names, and then that will be, do you think that'll help?
Mike.
No, Matt's finally gone as self-indulgent as he wanted to, and he's now literally interviewing himself. That's probably what they would think. So, yes, all right, that's a good answer to that question. I guess we look fairly similar.
There's elements that we do. So I
asked the kids too, I asked my two lovely daughters, I said, you got any questions for Uncle Mike? And they were, you know, spot on with their personalities, as always.
Yes.
Violet, the eldest, asked, who bullied who when we were kids? Which I thought was a good question to ask.
I thought she'd ask whether Uncle Mike was on TikTok, but anyway.
I don't think she wants you to be on TikTok.
No, I am, but...
I'll get your details later.
Yeah, I'll go looking for her. So you want to answer that question? Who bullied who?
Yeah.
Oh, well, it was me bullying you to some extent, or me encouraging Jace to bully you. Being the oldest, I pitted you two together a lot.
Yes.
So I could start, but I never, there was never any, there was never any fisticuffs as such. There was a bit of wrestling.
Yeah.
There was never any fisticuffs. The last thing I ever wanted to do was to hurt you guys, but obviously verbally I was doing a pretty good job until.
I was about to say, just emotional.
Yeah. Until you in particular got to a certain age where intellectually you were exceeding my limits, and you were bullying, you particularly bullied Jason with your words. So
Cool. Let's get into that a bit later on, because like I thought, there'd be a lot of things that you would say tonight that I'd be like, oh, I didn't know that was happening.
Oh, my, of course.
So I going back to you bullying or strategic bullying, that's being the eldest of three children. I've seen Justine, her brother is the eldest of three, and I've seen him do exactly the same thing. Like he's reading the older sibling playbook. And the thing I always marveled at was how one of us, me or Jason, would be annoyed at you, and then by the end of it would be fighting each other.
Yeah.
And I've seen, like I said, Justine's brother Chris do exactly the same thing. Just what he's done something to annoy one of them, and then by the end of it, he's somehow twisted it so they're shouting at each other, and he's just sitting back enjoying the show.
Yeah, I like to think that I'm past that. Unlike Justine's brother, I like to think I'm past that. But yeah, I think it you can go all psychological on it, but I think basically it was, you know, there was me for a couple of years, and then me and Jason, then me, Jason, you, and it took sort of 4 years for you to come along. But I had, you know, there were certain things that I benefited from, including my own room. So the fact that, you know, you guys shared your own room, you shared a lot more things. Even when I started school, it was just you two.
Yeah.
So there was probably a lot of pent-up angst in other areas that I was able to, you know, subconsciously feed off.
Yeah.
But it was as simple as me saying something to Jace and Jace biting back and you going, ah,
that's right.
And then Jace going, well, you suck too, Matt. And you're going, well, you know, you do too, Jace. And then you guys would get to fisticuffs and I would keep running around the yard until you stopped chasing me. And then you start chasing each other. So I was a wuss. I didn't want any physical violence whatsoever.
Right. This is already like my favorite interview ever, because I've just realized that just how egotistical like you are as a child, that like none of this ever, like seeing the world from your point of view never entered into my thoughts whatsoever growing up. It's like, they're living separate lives or they're experiencing things differently. And you just carry on just in your own world, just thinking, oh, that's how it was. So
I didn't analyze it obviously too much
back then.
But I'm sure just looking back on that, I just go, oh fuck, you guys shared a room and you did this and you did that. And then even when we were older and I was finally working, holidays, it was just you two. Obviously there's a good chance for you two to bond, but there was enough damage done prior to that maybe it didn't happen.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm sure you realize, like, we can rake over these coals, but if you ever wanted to like share a room with Jason, I would have been happy to have a room of my own.
On your own. Jace would have as well. Yeah.
I was talking to the girls the other day and I said, well, you know, I was the first one, even though I was the youngest, I was the first one to move out of home. And it was just basically to get my own room. Like that was the main reason, was like, ugh. Yeah. I'm sure you're right. It did mean bonding in some way, but it also meant, Jesus, we got on each other's nerves. Yeah, we were the original odd couple.
forget Statler and Waldorf, I was going to say. Walter Matthau, what's his name?
It was fairly, Jack Klugman. No, wait.
That's
a TV show.
That's gone further back. Yeah. I don't know.
Right, the film. I had to leave home to get my own room, but the other thing about the like lack of violence in our house, which is something to be happy about, was you have passed on a trait to your eldest niece here, Violet, which reminds me so much of you in that she's got the same limbs that you do, the octopus, enormous octopus arms and legs, and I see Noelle trying to wrestle her or tackle her and she just can't get into the position to attack because of the
pudgy arms.
Mm. Yeah, the arms and legs just going in all directions, seemingly like four times longer than they actually are. I don't know how you manage that.
Yeah, and then she picked up the same traits of being able to grab Noelle's wrist so she can't get her.
Yep. There's a lot. There's quite a lot in Violet where I'm like, oh, that's Uncle Mike used to do this to me. And Noelle's like, well, what are you doing? I don't have the answers to that, sorry. Yeah. I never worked that out, but either way.
You can tell her what Uncle Jace used to do, and that was learn Taekwondo.
Yeah.
And I stopped that pretty darn quickly.
Yeah, when he started learning exactly how to punch you, yes, it was sort of...
Well, I could still grab his wrist, but then he could kick. He had balance to be able to pivot himself and kick, so I stopped that pretty quickly.
So what I was going to say was just talking about growing up, did you, when you started to obviously get older and see other families, did you notice a difference in comparison to our family? Or like the main thing I realized was going to see other families is just how much other families fight. And if they do fight, just how intense it becomes. I never felt like our household was ever too volatile. Or am I just, is that rose-colored glasses there?
I guess when you hear stories at school of certain other households, so, you know, particularly brothers that had older brothers that would come home drunk and fight with their younger brothers, that was not common, but that would happen, or just other brothers fighting, or my mate Ewok, he had two older sisters, and he would have puncture marks in his wrists where his sisters would, you know, lash out with their long nails and pinch and all that sort of stuff.
Wow.
But I probably, as we got into our teenage years, I probably didn't spend too much time at other people's houses. One of my mates, he was an only child, so, and both his parents worked.
Yep.
In some of the other places, I was gobsmacked by the poverty in the houses. I didn't sort of see too much violence, but the poverty, or, you know, going to people's houses where both parents worked and just saw how that worked. You know, there was an air of wonderment there that, wow, you mean both your parents aren't home? You know, like, it took us a while before that started happening.
That's true. It was quite a time. And then I guess that started to not happen so much, I guess, when Dad was retrenched from the bank. But that was like my memory of growing up was that Dad wasn't there during the week, because he'd leave at whatever 6:30 and get home at 7, and we had to clear out when he came home. You're right. Something I haven't really thought about is just when you go to other people's houses, especially where we grew up, and realize the poverty or the people living without way more than we were.
Yeah, and we did it tough for quite a number of years, but you know, Mum kept a pretty clean house. I think that was part of it. I would go to some people's houses and just go, "Holy fuck, you live like this?"
Yeah,
you know. So while we didn't have a lot of money, Mum kept the house running, I guess, to some extent, and so it generally wasn't a bad place to be when we were, you know.
No, and I mean we had a big backyard was the main thing, right? And a fairly kept backyard, because all we ever did was play sport. Again, that's my main memory of growing up in that house, is being in the backyard either playing rugby league in winter or playing cricket in summer.
Yeah, there was always plenty of sport, but that was partly because Mum just kicked you outside and just went, "Right, see you at lunchtime. Right, see you at dinner time. Right, it's dark, come in."
Yeah, but that didn't...
Yes, sir.
That certainly didn't seem to, I mean, again, looking back, it certainly didn't seem to bother us to be outside playing cricket for 9 hours a day if we had to.
Yeah, no, it didn't. It was, you know, when it was too hot, obviously Mum would let us inside, but there was shade by the fence palings, the wooden fence. You could sit by the wooden fence in the shade at a certain time of the afternoon. And I remember quite a few times when the family would come over and all the cousins would be traipsing in and out of the house.
Yeah,
cranky Auntie Annie would be going, "Get out, come on out," and me and you and Jace would be outside already. We'd be sitting there. "No, you're not allowed to go back inside. Get out, come on, out." So,
yeah, it's so good that she's mellowed, isn't it? In all those years, it's still the same. There you go.
The fire doesn't have the same impact.
It's true. So the other question about growing up, how do you think your experience of growing up was different to mine? So there's 4 years difference, but, you know, you're the first and I'm the third. I'm sure you noticed some differences.
I probably had Mum at home more. So you had to become a bit more independent younger. So when Mum started to work as well, and, you know, I had the responsibility of doing certain things when we got home, get the clothes off the line and all that sort of stuff. But I think you were getting home by yourself quite a few times there. So you were probably developing that independence earlier than what I was.
Yeah.
I don't sort of recall you getting your way more than I do, you know, like often you often hear talk about, oh, I never got away with that when I was your age or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't sort of tend to look back on that and seeing you getting too much of your way there. But I think you grew up faster. I had more attention, of course, being the oldest for a little while, but I think you had to grow up faster because, you know, the stuff that we used to put on television and the responsibility that you had, you're traveling commitment to school and all that sort of stuff. So apart from wanting to move out because you wanted your own room, I think you were probably ready for that. I was very cozy in my life, even though, you know, I didn't do very well at school or whatever else. I had the creature comforts even when I started work, go to work, come home, there's a meal, I got my own bedroom, you know. So I probably had more responsibility.
Yeah.
But I think that you probably had to grow up a bit quicker to some extent. You and your friends at Gosford High, you left your common sense. You left your common sense button at home, you know, at some stage. But I think there was a number of aspects of your life where you had to grow up and be responsible quickly. So
I remember being, I think it was 14, and I remember sitting on the front veranda and Granny in her usual way, just, and when we say Granny, we mean our mum, so that could be a bit confusing, but she just out of nowhere just went, yeah, you'll leave home first. And it was just like, oh, what? What do you mean? Oh, yeah, you'll leave home first. And I was like, okay, all right. But I guess she could see, like, I was pretty itchy feet, wanting to get out. I think to get out of the house first and foremost, but also to get out of that town. I think I always looked at, especially when we were playing cricket, I didn't want to be a person who was like, oh yeah, no, this is where I've lived all my life. I knew that I wanted to go to England. I knew that I wanted to, you know, travel. I knew I wanted to teach. If I was going to be a teacher, the first thing I wanted to do was teach like out west. I don't know why.
Yeah,
I think I had a teacher mention that's what they did when I was in primary school. And I just, that always stuck with me of like just going somewhere different. How awesome would that be? Which I understand, like that's not something that's in every person to be like, oh, you know, some people, like you said, like the creature comforts of home. But I as soon as I got my own room, I was just like, this is just great. And, you know, like,
yeah. Plus you had a bit of direction there too in terms of your teaching, whereas I sort of went through school because it was something to do. My friends were at school, you know, you went to your parties and whatever else, but it was just something to do. Then it took me 9 months to get a job because I had a shit house, you know, HSC mark, a shit house TER. I was unemployed with dad at the same time.
That was fun.
I was mowing lawns and getting cash in hand. So that was my beer money when I was going to the, you know, the club or whatever else. But it just, I didn't have any goal or direction apart from I've got money so I can go drinking with my friends and I can play sport, play cricket during summer. I can go and watch local footy during winter. So, you know, that was just my life. And I was content with that for quite a long time before I went, you know, it's time to go. Whereas, you know, you went, well, I want to be a teacher. Well, to be a teacher, you've got to do this. Well, I wanted to be in radio, but they said, oh, you've got to go and live in another part of the world. And I went, why would I do that? I've got everything I want here right now.
Right. So,
whereas you went, I don't care. I'm, you know, I'm prepared to leave my friends if I need to.
Yeah.
To pursue what I need to pursue.
Yeah. And I think I was, you know, lucky in the way that, you know, I moved to Newcastle. It's not that far away. I was still playing cricket on the coast for the whole time I was at uni. But I think, like you said, to leave your friends, but quite a few of the friends were going to Newcastle Uni and ended up moving up there, or like someone like Wigo who moved up there with no money and, you know, like you would say was a poor business decision or poor economic decision, but, you know, like he was like, well, everyone's up here, so I'm going to move. So that kind of helped, I think, was just to have that stability. And like you said, to have that direction, I often think like that a big help in that stability was the fact that I wanted to be a teacher from 8 years old. So I think that a lot of the worry, or all the worry of like choosing a career, and like you said, like if you don't do well at school, then having trying to find your direction. I just had a direction from that age, so it was that part of it, I think, really helped me just go, all right, well, I'm gonna, like you said, I've got a direction, I'll just move out and I'll go to uni and then I'll get a job. And I never really questioned that not happening. So
yeah, and it was, I don't think it was a shock to anyone around you either when you decided that was going to happen. See, for me, I had a mate move to Sydney and then that was it. I had other mates who were unemployed as well.
Right.
And those had sort of left in year 10 and were commuting to Sydney and still living at home. So I still had all that. I still had all that here. And I just wasn't ready to let go of it. I also, I was still 17 when I finished year 12. I think I was still quite young mentally as well in regards to that. So,
but yeah, you were one of the youngest.
You was just go.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I spent the end of last 6 months of 1991 listening to all the stories about the 18-year-olds going to get pissed at the club or what they did on New Year's Eve while I sat in my bedroom.
Well, let's talk about being that age at that time. And can you take us through the events of your 17th birthday party?
You don't want to ask mum or dad about that?
Well, see, I have vague memories of it. Obviously, the party happening around the house, of looking out the front window and seeing people in there, what seemed like hundreds. Was there more than hundreds? Maybe there were hundreds of people all gathered on the front road, people fighting. Was it two girls having a mad fight out the front of the house? The neighbor coming out to like shout at everyone, the cops turning up, all that good stuff.
The cops turning up. Okay, well, it pretty much, the way it happened was I said to my mate that I was thinking of having a party for my birthday. Mum and dad had said yes. This was like, this is Chinese whispers to the nth degree. My mate said, oh, we're thinking of going to Sydney next Friday night. He was 18, a couple of others were 18. And I said, I'm thinking of having my birthday party that night. Oh, are you? Hey, Rob, Mike's thinking of having his birthday party next Friday, so we won't go to Sydney. Okay, so going to school on Monday, and it's plastered up on the Year 12 wall, party McBarry's Friday night.
Wow, was it that quick? So like a week before you were like, I might have a
so
party.
So I'd said to my mate on Friday, on Monday it was up on the wall, because this guy was a good artist. He used to draw pictures of everyone, so he drew a picture of me with a sign that said party. And so then people threw their sporting circles and whatever else just passed the word. So as a result,
So was that what always happened? That was always my question was, is this what happened at every party ever at your school? Was just someone's having a party, good, word gets around, or was it just happened to be this one?
Oh, no, word gets around. However, you try to put it off telling people as long as possible. So it was like it came out about Wednesday that someone was having a party. And so once you got a bit of momentum, people would come in on Monday and go, that was a great party. Who's having one this week? And then you just, so in this case, it was like, I was just going to have to let it sit until the Wednesday.
You know what?
Minimize the numbers.
That is just a spot on observation. And now when I think of it, this cat, hang on a sec. I'm sure you told me this when I, because of your party, I had to follow the footsteps 4 years later and convince mum and dad that the same thing wasn't going to happen. And one of the things I had was convincing them was that I wouldn't tell people until, because I think you mentioned it to me, was that not to tell people until like the Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got to hope that nothing else gets organized by then. And then just sort of let it loose at that particular time. So we had students from St. Eddie's, St. Joey's, so your minor high, and I knew a lot of them.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a particular problem, and some of them had been to other parties. But so it was pretty packed. You know, guys from what, I was in year 12, so guys from year 11 and year 10, you know, it all rocked up as well, and there was, you know, plenty of drinking going on. And there was plenty outside, out the front. One of the neighbours who was interested in cars, I can't remember his name, he sort of lived across to the left.
Yeah.
One of the guys turned up in a Tirana, and he actually came out and was talking to him about his car. It was his way of saying, I'm watching your car, but I'm also watching, making sure you guys don't screw up.
Right.
But a couple of the girls were having words, and one of the girls was in year 12, and I didn't know the other girl. The girl who was in year 12, I got on quite well with, and she'd alerted to me that this other chick was trying to fight. She didn't want to have a bar of it. She knew it was my party, and she wanted to just have a good time.
Yeah.
So they got into a few scuffles, but nothing came of it. But it was around about, you know, 11:45 or something. They started fighting down the side of the house. And Kelly, her name was, she'd had enough of it, so she lashed out, and so it all went, and that was when Dad's voice cut through like a like a chainsaw on a cold winter's morning in British Columbia.
Yes.
You can all get the fuck out.
Yeah.
And then the crowd yelled louder as, hey, Mike's dad's got the shit tree. but Mum just rang the police and said, we're just breaking up a party. There's a lot of people
turn
up. So four cop cars later turn up, which was a lot at that time. I'd never seen that many police cars turn up.
Yeah.
Just from this one particular fight. The guy out the front, as I said, I can't remember his name. He was just making sure everything was okay. A couple of the other neighbours came out just to make sure everything was all right. Dad was walking around. Did he ever tell the steamroller trick? Did we ever talk about the steamroller trick?
No, what's the steamroller?
So you know how Dad used to have his steamrollers?
Yeah.
So it was a trick he learned from fighting in the pub when he used to
Wait. When you say steamrollers.
The lollies.
Oh, yep. The steamrollers, like the strong mints, right? Yep. Right.
Yeah,
in a roll.
Like a lifesaver type thing, but they're in a roll. So
okay,
he learned this from his fighting days in the OB hotel. What they used to get the rolls of coins, and you put them in your hand.
In your hand, right?
To protect your knuckles.
Jesus.
So he was walking around with the steamrollers in his hand there, protecting his knuckles, ready to swing if someone was looking to have a fight.
Right. I don't know what happened, but I certainly would be putting money on the very large 40-year-old man.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
Without a doubt. That's right. But the only fight that I can recall, I really wasn't that drunk, was the girls. Other than that, there was no real other fight. From what I remember, there was just a lot of people. And I just have visions of my mate Big Scotty running up the street when the cops turn up so he didn't get caught.
Yes.
But just the so then it got dispersed and everyone went home and that was fine. But just as a side issue, the girl who was in the fight from my year, she was my dance partner at the year 12 formal. I asked her to be my dance partner at the year 12 formal. So it was a wonderful little spin. And Mum and Dad have photos of me dancing with this woman, with this girl who was in the fight at my 17th birthday. She felt so bad.
She will fight for your honor. It's like the Karate Kid.
Oh, yeah, no, she was, but she felt so bad afterwards. She came up the next day sort of on the Monday and apologised so much.
Yeah.
And she even apologised to Mum and Dad, I think, at the year 12 formal. But she felt, there's a photo, and I'll see if I can dig it out and you can put it on here. There's a photo of me and her on the dance floor with our fists up because she knew that Mum and Dad were taking a photo, or someone was taking a photo. There's a photo of her with her fists up.
That is awesome.
Yeah, right? She was lovely.
Fighting for your love. Oh, that's great. Yeah, because I just remember seeing that. But also, when I wanted to have my 18th when I was in year 12, yes, there were conditions. Yes, you need to, every person you invite, you need to say to them, do not invite other people. Do not. But it was a bit different. It was a little different with our school. I mean, you still had parties where things like that happened, but it was a bit less, I think, because we were all from different parts of the coast. A bit of an effort to get to
a
party, like people were traveling from 40 minutes away. So you can't just go, hey, everyone, let's go to a party 40 minutes away. No one's going to do that. But there was a lot of last minute like planning or letting people know. Because of your party.
Oh, yeah, it's normally the other way around. I don't have a party. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
But what is also interesting is that with you and your friends and some people over the years, when Karen's been at school, have asked me about Gosford High. And I said, oh, yeah, my brother went to Glossify, and I told them about the common sense that went missing.
I said, I remember Julia, your lovely wife, saying, you guys are the smartest people in the world, but you're so stupid. basically shouting at us, and we were like, oh, whoa, come on now. But yes, I would agree. Yes, no common sense.
But however, what I say to them is that the commitment that everyone has to go to school, then there's a commitment to everyone to go to their friend's place. So they're not just going to go to a friend's place just for something to do. There's a fair bit of commitment in the kids' perspective to go there. So don't feel put out by having to drive them to Berkeley Vale for a sleepover, because what you're doing is you're instilling a greater sense of friendship in them than what they may get if they're at a school that's just up the road.
Yeah.
And the fact that you guys are all still so close after all these years, I think is testament to that.
That's a very good observation. I haven't thought of that. I have a few friends here in Canberra who have asked me that, like, how are you still friends with people from high school? And you're right. Maybe that's it. Is it just that from the start of our friendships, you had to travel, like my best friends in year 7 and 8 was a 40-minute train ride in each direction to go to their house. But so, yeah, you're probably right. There probably is.
Just I jump on my bike and go home and go to their place. It's just around the corner.
Now, speaking of that, I don't mean to turn this into a gotcha podcast, but you mentioned something earlier about, other people hearing other people's horror stories of like their brothers getting drunk and coming home. I remember you coming home drunk one afternoon.
I've replayed this story so many times in my head. it's fine, Matthew, go to town.
but I like my story is, my questions aren't like, oh, I'll take us through all the gory details. Yeah. It's like my memory is, I guess, were you in year 11 or 12 or earlier?
Yeah, no, it was year 12.
So year 12, and it was about 5 o'clock. Mum and Dad were both working. And about 5 o'clock, your friend was carrying you down the street and wheeling your bike home.
Yeah, daylight saving time, so it was still very bright and sunny.
Yes, it was still very bright and sunny. And then they put you to bed. And I don't think I realised what was going on until I went into your room and you were just completely off your face. And I was like, oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, cool.
Right, yeah, all right. And then, we just left you. When mum got home, I think, God, that would have been good to have footage of me or Jason going, hi, mum.
It was Jason, wasn't it?
Hi. Maybe you want to go and talk to Michael. He's in bed. Just probably sitting by the door. Yeah. So what happened like after?
No, well, actually, just quickly on that, your mum was concerned about me until she said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I've had too much to drink," and then she lost all concern for me. Then just I think walked out. So
sorry, I know that's bad, but I did that with a deputy principal in my first year of teaching. So think about that. I've got to go home. Oh, really? You're not well? No. I think I'm still drunk, and it was the same. Like, oh, well, go then. Just a complete change of face to sympathy to get the fuck out of my school.
Yeah, later down the track, he would have wouldn't have minded your honesty, but at the time, holy fuck, what have you done?
Yeah,
schnapps. But I think what happened was my mate was having an 18th party in a couple of weeks' time, and he'd gone out and bought the grog that was going to be drunk on that night. He'd already had it planned. And what he'd done is he'd bought half a dozen bottles of Bombora, which was what? Cheap Malibu. So it was, coconut flavored. So it might've been before the trial HSC, for example, or maybe even before the HSC. So we'd been on study, and I'd been at the school at Woiwai High School for touch football training. So I think we were going away to the Met North Championships or something. So I'd actually ridden from home to school to do that.
Mm.
But before then, there was conversation that happened that we're going to have a card afternoon at Pedo's, which was up near the Root Bridge.
Yeah.
So when I finished that at school, I rode up to his place at Orange Grove on the Rip Bridge. Now I wouldn't dream of riding that far, but at the time I was 17. So we were playing cards, and he got one of the bottles out of Bombora to have a drink. Now we had to mix with it. He had a couple of things in the fridge, so we were drinking Bombora and playing cards. And then we ran out of that, so we're drinking Bombora with creamy soda. Oof. And then we were drinking it with.
Oh, hang on, milk. Just let me process that. Bombora yeah. with creaming soda.
Yeah, and then I think we were drinking it with milk. I'm not sure. So, but what it turned out, it was five of us, and we went through three bottles of Bombora, I think.
Yep. Okay.
In a very short space of time. So when it was time to go, we'd been sitting down for a couple of hours. So when it was time to go,
right, standing up,
my legs wouldn't work, and I still had probably a k and a half to ride, and my other mates were walking as well. So I was walking my bike and walking myself and trying to get home. We walked across Edelong Oval and I fell over. I thought my bike was broken, but the handlebars are around the wrong way. So my mate Rowdy picked the bike up, and Big Scotty was walking ahead and he didn't want to have anything to do with me. So there was stumbling, there was bumbling, there was people pulling over to see if I was okay, and continuing to walk. And somehow I just managed to get to right at the end of Winifred Avenue, and I fell over, and the guys had enough for me, and they just left me. But I'd taken my bike and my bag home, so they'd just sort of gone around the corner.
Right, yes, gotcha.
And so Rowdy came back to get me and pick me up. And as we're walking up Winifred Avenue down the far end, a car came to a stop. And it was Nicole Catley.
Yeah.
Nicole Catley was a police officer at the time. And she'll still remember the story, I'm sure. But she pulled up and I was just a mess. And I went, oh, Nicole, it's you. And she's just gone, oh, fuck. She gets me in the car and she's all the rest of the way home. Don't you spew in my car, Mick. Don't you spew in my car. But I was hallucinating. I was just so unbelievably drunk. At the time, I'm not sure, Robert Palmer's song Simply Irresistible, I don't think it was in the charts at that time, but I'm convinced to this day that the girls in that film clip walked past while I was lying on the ground. Sure I saw them, and that it could have been the colour that the Bombora and the creaming soda made a similar colour to their dresses, or maybe that was the colour of the vomit. I'm not sure.
Jesus.
But that was my trip home, and then got home, and Dave and Scott put me to bed and left everything where they needed to, and then walked out. So I don't remember Mum coming in. I don't remember the conversation the next day. It was a long time ago, but that was pretty much it. Hi boys, this is what happens when you drink too much at 17.
Yeah, it was good education to be like, that doesn't look fun. But I was never even one for that. I remember going to parties in year 10 and seeing people in that state, just like necking bottles of whatever, hard spirits they could, and then just like vomiting or just being passed out at like 8:30. And that never really appealed to me. And I've said it before, I think that was a lot to do with growing up in the cricket club of actually seeing, I wouldn't say sensible drinking, but like people, I mean, that it happens. Like you get to about 19, even 20, where you just go, oh, that kind of binge drinking ridiculousness is just not fun at all. And you're better off drinking over a long period of time and having more fun. And I think just growing up in that was just, just drinking around adults and seeing that they didn't, drink a bottle of scotch and then vomit and pass out and think it was a great night. They actually felt it was better to be still up at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I think that was something that helped, because I was never one for just getting completely off my face. I did, of course, but never like, it's 8 o'clock and my night's over. I was never one for that. I was usually the person holding someone's hair while they're vomiting.
Yes. Yeah. Party starts at 7. First vomit about 8:30.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's a mess from there. Yeah,
putting people to bed at 9 o'clock and then having them get up again at like 2 to refreshed and ready to go. Right. Now, I don't know how long we've been talking for, but one of the things I think you're still going to have to give some kind of truncated answer to this, but one of the things that I only found out about you fairly recently was just when I asked you how you got into radio, because you were saying that you didn't have much direction. You got a job at Centrelink. You probably didn't really enjoy that, but I enjoyed getting a lift to school every morning. That was pretty nice. But then you started to work in radio. Can you take us through what you did? What were the special things you did to get into a pretty, exclusive radio course?
It's probably still one of my proudest moments when I think back to that, because I was doing a course. I did a course with Rick Julian at the community radio station, and then thought I was king shit. And I did a couple of shifts on community radio.
Yeah, I remember. I remember calling you.
May still have the tape. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of my first shift. He may still have the tape.
Fantastic.
I don't ever want to hear it, but you'll hear everything, including me leaving the microphone off and bagging somebody out. And
quality.
It might be worth listening just for that.
I don't think I called you on the first night, but called you to, what did I ask you to play? Was it My Old Man's a Dustman? Is that what I got asked to play? Something
if
like
I didn't
that.
Play it, I'd probably sung it.
Yeah. It was either that or there's a red back on the toilet seat, but I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, it was too long ago. It was too long ago.
Too
many scotches ago. I was in the public service. I was in the public service for 8 years, and they started to finally bring in KPIs and all things like that. And I sat down with my boss, who I got on very well with, and she said, all right, we're going to go through these things. I want you to go back and think about where you want to be, what you want to do, because I was a land support officer. So a pretend computer technician. Did you turn it off and turn it back on again?
Yes, exactly.
And when I went through the questions, I came back to her a couple of days later and she said, what do you think? I said, I think I need to leave and actually apply for this course. So the course was filled with the Australian Film, Television, Radio School. They take 12 people Australia-wide, sometimes 11. You've got time to plan. You've got time to plan the application and whatever else. But I did some stuff on community radio, and I thought I'm going to have a crack at this. So I had to write a 1,000-word essay. I had to have a demo tape, and I had to have some references. So I hadn't really done enough in community radio. So first and foremost, my 1,000-word essay was I was stranded on a desert island called Centrelink, and I couldn't get off. And I needed help. And I had all these examples of what I tried to do to get off the desert island. Then I went and dirtied the application, like with a tea bag. You wet the tea bag. I didn't tea bag it, no, but you wet the tea bag and dab it.
This is what we used to do in year 7 when we were like pretending we're on an archaeological dig.
Yeah, well, I didn't have anything else to go on. I needed to use my creativity to stand out in front of them, first of all. So then, and I burnt the edges to make it look like a treasure map.
Yeah.
Because I didn't have any real experience on radio, I got into 2GO with Rick Julian on a Sunday and made up my own radio station. So
now,
my radio station.
Rick was a family friend, right? Like a friend of
Rick was. Yeah, Rick one of our was a Yeah, a friend of Uncle Ross used to go surfing together, and Dad knew him as well.
Yeah.
But the fact that he was doing this course and I rang up, I recognised his voice, and that sort of helped get in touch. And so then when I wanted to apply for this, I rang him and he said, yeah, come in while I do the sport on a Sunday. So I made up this whole station. It was called Crusoe FM. I had to do news reports based on Desert Island. I had to do – the Olympics were being talked about, so I had to do the Olympics being cancelled because the long jump pit was in quicksand, you know, and all this other shit. And then he put it all onto tape for me. I had to do ads, whatever else. So he did that. I got my CVs and I sent it all in a cylindrical container in a bottle. So I had the application in a bottle and sent it that way. So it was a three-prong course. So then they rang me and said, you progress through to the next round. And a bit of poo came out.
So, but my question is, like, I mean, So what were you about? 20?
20. I was 25 at the time.
So at any point did you think this is crazy and they're just going to throw this in the bin, or like quite a swing is what I mean. Like it's quite a hefty swing you took.
No, I just think I'd been thinking about it for a little while and I'd heard an ad on the wireless, funnily enough.
yep.
But no, it just felt right. Like Julia and I bought a house. Like why would you move away when you bought a house?
Yeah.
Why would you get up an hour and a half earlier every day to start writing your application and to write it, edit, right. and another edit, and another edit, and another edit, mm-hmm. another edit? But yeah. I did it relatively easy. So it was just one of those things where it was like, I've got to have a go. And if I don't have a go, well, I'll see what else I can do, but I've got to have a go.
It's a testament really to like we try and think about in terms of teaching and at school is that a lot of times the teachers have quite a narrow focus. Like if you're not doing the work or you're not succeeding at high school, then your life's crap. Like you're not going to succeed. And if you don't know the lessons now, then how are you going to succeed? But it's a great testament to be like, number one, you have to be ready. And number two, you have to always find that one or that thing that is going to switch that stuff on. Because if you put that effort into school, then you would have succeeded at school, but you just, that didn't grab you. But then you have this one opportunity and it's easy, right? It's easy to do. Mm.
Yeah, in hindsight, it was all that, and I wish I could tap back into it. But I think I've sort of learned over time that things pop up when they do, and it might take 20 years to pop up. But I could go on for hours about other tangents of my life that I look at now and go, okay, I've been a bit frustrated with this, but there's a reason why. I'll get my head above water soon. I can feel it, and it'll be okay. You know. So I just to go back, I did that first bit. The second bit was I had to go into the local radio station to 2GO. Then they had to give me all this paperwork, and then I had to read something. Like I had no time. Get in there, get behind the mic. You're not experienced behind the bike, too bad. Away you go. So I had 20 minutes to write pieces, to do anything. So I went in there and did as best as I could. I had to do an ad lib on the GST and whatever else. They gave me a tape. And I just thought, oh, I fucked it. That was no good.
Yeah.
How am I going to get around this? So what I did, this on my way back to work, what I did, I took a photocopy of the tape that it was on.
Okay.
I then sent it through via fax and said, here is a copy of Mike Barry's tape. I'll send the original in the mail.
Okay.
Okay. So then I put the tape in a box, and on the box it was a small box. It was about the size of a tape, and it had flowers on it. I got rose petals from the garden, and I put rose petals in it. And then I bought an In Sympathy card, and I put that in there as well, and wrote on it, in the passing of Mike Barry's public service career, let us hope he has a safe journey into the next life. I sent that and sent that off. So again, I didn't think the tape was very good, but they're just going, holy crap, this boy's creative. We just need to harness that.
Yeah.
So then it had a third bit. I can't tell this any faster, Matt. You have to understand.
No, I understand. This is the second time I've heard it. It still boggles my brain. The swings that you're taking here to just.
Yeah. So the third bit was an interview. They rang me and said, you've got an interview. Holy fuck. So again, this is, you know, you talked about it before. This is what I did. I found out who did the course that year. A woman called Corinne McKay did the course. She was working at 2GB. I rang her. I said, I'm doing the afters interview. What can I expect? She gave me all these tips and she said, there's an additional bit at the end that they won't tell you about. They'll surprise you at. And you do this and do this and do this. I went, great, beautiful. So then I also went to Vinnie's and bought a nice shirt, Vinnie style, and a nice pair of pants.
Yeah.
And then I went out in the backyard and I wrestled with the dog with them so that they ripped and so that they dirtied and whatever else. And I went, I'm turning up at this interview like I've got off the desert island, like literally off the boat that rescued me, straight to the interview.
Right.
So I didn't shave for a couple of weeks. I needed a haircut. I didn't get a haircut. I walked in to the interview, to the receptionist. I said, I'm here for my interview. And they said, beautiful, take a seat. I went into the change room, got changed, came out, no shoes on, clothes ripped, all that sort of shit. And she was on the phone at the time to the head of radio, because that's what they did. They rang and said, okay, what do you think? What's their presence like? Were they nice to you? Were they mean to you? Were they arrogant? And she's like, you won't believe what you're about to see. And so he came up and he went, Mike. And I went, Steve, how are you? Pleased to meet you. Walk this way, you know. And I did the whole interview dressed like I'd come straight from a desert island. And yes. I don't believe I answered the questions very well. Like, there was top right. people in the media, in the radio industry there asking me questions.
You're just hoping the smell would distract them.
I did shower, though. I did shower. But then at the end of it, he said, well, that's the end of the interview for us. There's something else that you need to do. And I said, I'm aware of that. I have Corinne to thank. And he went, ah. So it was just, you know, I went in and did this other thing, which I didn't do very well. But again, everything in that score was staged to test yeah. you know. The person producing was paying no attention to me. He was dressed shabbily and he just, you know, didn't care. I asked him a question and he just didn't answer. He just read the paper. All that sort of stuff. They just did a full psychological mind fuck on people, and they didn't accept people in based on the way they treated them. Even that last bit, they were perfect for radio until that last bit, and they just didn't pick them. It was as simple as that. So then they rang me a week later or something. They said, Mike, we'd like to offer you a position. And the general manager of the time of the call center I was working in was hosting he had a meeting in the boardroom where people had sort of come from everywhere. And I walked in there and opened the door and went, I fucking got in. And he looked at me and went, great. Because he was a big advocate of me. He was wonderful. Yeah. And then I was just sort of on cloud nine. And then it, like you said, that it was a 9-month course, and I've never worked harder in my life and never had so much fun up until then. Sorry. I'd never worked harder in my life. Right. And never had so much fun, but it was just one of those things that I wish every so often I could tap back into to go, you know, you've done it before. Just take the step, you know what's going to happen when you take the step. It's going to be good.
There's more to lose, isn't there?
That's it. And I sort of felt at the time, I sort of had nothing to lose. And Julia was right behind me, even though I'm sure her ass was doing 50 cent, 20 cent, 50 cent, 20 cent.
I'd love to, next time I see her, I'll ask her what she thought of your ideas, of your creative ideas.
Just everything. I think she was a bit spun out by that, but just, you know, the hardest part was, you know, the next 12 months or the 12 months after I left AFTERS and got my first job. That was probably the hardest time on Julia in particular. Yeah, and Bert's a piece of piss in comparison. No, I can't say that. I think that was probably one of her hardest times, that 12 months after, just because of the decision that I'd made and she'd supported me. That was tough going. But, you know, I look back on it fondly just the same.
Fantastic. Again, like the swings that you had to take. And I guess that's what got you the job, was that they were like, well, this person wants this job. And that gets your foot in the door. All right.
Well, like I said, there was 13. Sorry, there was 13 Australia wide. There was someone from Newman, someone from Victoria. There was Sydney Siders who'd been working on Sydney Radio. There was a couple of coasties. It was just it was just amazing to be part of that and working with some of the best radio people in the business.
Just insane. Well, we got to wrap it up, but I. Again, like, obviously scratch the surface of the 42 years that I've known you. So I wanted to ask you, the last question I have is from my lovely youngest daughter. I've asked you Violet's question. And
yes.
Noelle's question is maybe the hardest question you've had to answer today, which is, what do you prefer, tea or coffee?
You can tell Noelle that I do love my coffee.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything beats a cup of black tea.
Oh, right. No sugar?
No sugar, just black. I like my Yorkshire tea, bag left in. Tea, and then top it up. Like, the bags are so strong, I can get 2 or 3 cups of tea with each tea bag.
Oh, nice. And just keep it going.
So I look forward to coming down and having a cup of tea with Noelle.
We had a cup of tea this afternoon. It was a delight, obviously. It's always a delight. With Noelle, but yes. Okay.
Does she lift a little finger? Does she lift the little finger when she sits?
I guess if you taught her that, she would happily take that on board of lifting. But she does take a very long time to drink her tea. She savors it. She likes to savor the world, I think is her.
I think that's it. It's the tea makes the world slow down to her pace.
That's great. That's fantastic. We might leave it there. Thanks, Juice.
No worries, mate.
I'll see you soon.
Good fun.